Adamski also revealed to the press some details of his visit to a U.S. government office, without mentioning Kennedy. The following day, reports Ragnhild A. Carlson, a Danish researcher who, together with Hans Petersen, helped arrange the Adamski visit, a large billboard for the Fredericia Dagblad displayed the following headline: Adamski, Venus mandat varade mig om Cuba krisen, man from Venus warned me about Cuba crisis. Despite his 72 years, he is still supple and gives the impression of being a well-balanced person, wrote the reporter. One cannot demand that people believe in flying saucers, Adamski was quoted as saying. They want proof, it's human nature. But those who have seen these objects have become convinced. I expect even less that people should believe that I have been contacted many times by men from Venus. But, a year ago I was contacted by, such, a man who said that, before long, there would be a crisis over Cuba, which could perhaps mean a third world war. That was 3 months before the Cuba crisis started. At that time I happened to be in Washington, D.C., and I went along to a government office where I passed on the information. During a visit to Washington in 1995, following a lecture he had given to a group of interested delegates at the United Nations in New York, Major Petersen made some interesting comments, including reference to a trip to another planet claimed by Adamski in early March 1962, specifically in relation to what eventually turned out to be the Cuban Missile Crisis in October that year. On his return, Adamski called Petersen, explaining that he had to go to Washington to deliver a message for the president. I cannot tell you what this message is, said Adamski, but if you follow the political situation on Earth, you will be able to see for yourself what the message contains. Had Kennedy not solved the Cuba crisis the way he did, Petersen pointed out, there would have been a third world war. 27 As General Anatoly Grybkov, former Soviet Army Chief of Operations, admitted, nuclear catastrophe was hanging by a thread. And we weren't counting days or hours, but minutes. 28 I learned from Luzinstag that, on an unknown date, Adamski had been entrusted with a written invitation for President Kennedy to visit one of the aliens' huge motherships at a secret airbase in Desert Hot Springs, California, for a few days. In order to keep this visit absolutely secret, Adamski was to take the invitation directly to the White House through a side door, where a man he knew was ready to let him in. Adamski later learned that Kennedy had spent several hours at the airbase, after having cancelled an important trip to New York, and that he had had a long talk with the ship's crew, but that he had not been invited for a flight. 29 Emily Crewe, the British researcher cited in Chapter 16, has related to me that on June 6, 1963, Adamski was invited for a meeting at Desmond Leslie's home in St. John's Wood, London. Those present included Earl Mountbatten of Burma, Supreme Allied Commander in Southeast Asia during World War II and appointed Chief of the Defence Staff in 1965, Lord Dowding, former Commander-in-Chief of RAF Fighter Command during the Battle of Britain in 1940, the Earl of Clancutty, Princely Lapua Trench, and Emily. The group, minus Emily, not in the best of health at the time, was later invited by Mountbatten for discussions at Broadlands, his estate in Hampshire. During the London meeting, Adamski revealed further details about the Kennedy contact. The alien craft had landed in the small hours on the tarmac at the end of one of the airbase runways. When Kennedy arrived, Emily reports, his car was stopped and he was advised to get out and walk to the ship that awaited him. He was to come alone. JFK obeyed the summons and he was seen entering the alien vessel and stayed for some time before he came out at last, later refusing to speak about the incident. 30. According to Henry Dohan, previously referenced in Chapter 7, many years prior to becoming president, Kennedy met with Adamski on several occasions at the latter's home in Vista, California, where he was introduced to several of the aliens living among us. Since the space people know the past, present, and future of every one of us, claimed Dohan, they told Kennedy that he would become the president of the U.S. Kennedy thought it was ludicrous, since he was Catholic, and the space people told him, no, you go for it and you will get it. Kennedy kept in touch with Adamski and had clandestine meetings with him, even when he was president. Kennedy had one weakness, and that was that he loved too many women. I believe he was intimate with Marilyn Monroe and confided in her about his extraterrestrial knowledge. Also, he was the first U.S. president to invest $1 billion of the U.S. budget in space research. He became a threat to our oil and industrial magnates, which led to his mafia assassination and that of Marilyn Monroe. 31. If there's any truth in the Lucille Ball, Reagan story mentioned earlier, it seems Kennedy wasn't alone in being encouraged to push for the presidency. Regarding Monroe, a putative CIA document dated August 3, 1962, is possibly revealing. 32 classified top secret, it references the FBI wiretapping of a conversation between the noted reporter Dorothy Kilgallen and Monroe's friend Howard Rothberg, in which the latter reveals to the reporter that Monroe kept a diary of secrets relating to her trysts with President Kennedy and his brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy. The memo also cites Rothberg as saying that Marilyn had secrets to tell, including the visit by the president at a secret airbase for the purpose of inspecting things from outer space. In the mid-50s, Kilgallen learned of secret efforts by the US and UK governments to identify the origin of crashed spacecraft and dead bodies, from a British government official. Almost certainly, the visit cited was the one JFK made to Tyndall Air Force Base, described earlier. The CIA memorandum goes on to cite a number of threats made by Monroe, including holding a press conference in which she would tell all. 33. President Carter. In 1969, President-to-be Jimmy Carter had a UFO sighting in Georgia, which he spoke about publicly on several occasions. Skeptics claimed he had merely spotted the planet Venus, a ridiculous explanation given Carter's background as a U.S. Navy submarine line officer, thus familiar with planets and stars. Harvey Jack McGeorge II, formerly in the Special Forces Reserve, Green Berets, at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, later worked in the U.S. Secret Service, Technical Security Division, at the White House as advisor on national and international terrorism. Having struck up a friendship with Carter, he is said to have been the first member of the Secret Service, outside of its chief, to have witnessed a presidential briefing on UFOs. The following report originates from an account which McGeorge gave to a friend in the 1980s, which was then passed on to Harry Levinson of Omni magazine. Upon Carter's insistence, and in spite of protestations from the National Security Agency, states a transcript of the report, McGeorge was allowed to attend a briefing session. There were two briefings given to Carter. McGeorge attended at least the initial briefing. Once the president was in the room, seated at a table, Jack McGeorge at another table, a member of the NSA gave an overall briefing on the phenomenon, stating its historical characteristics and bringing it up to the present time. At that point, a number of documents describing the evolutionary habits of the beings, the reasons they were here, and other matters of that consequence were shown. The next thing to be shown to Jimmy Carter was a 15-minute, color, film taken at Homan AFB in which UFO inhabitants and military personnel made physical contact. After that there were more briefings by national security people, and basically that was the end of the briefing. McGeorge, being a very observant person, noticed that on re-entering Carter's office about half an hour after the briefing, and I know this is going to be hard to believe, but he stated that Carter had tears in his eyes. 34. President Kursenlumtsinov. Kursenlumtsinov, former president, 1993-2010, of the southwestern Russian region of Karmakia, the only Buddhist region in Europe, a multimillionaire businessman and current president of the World Chess Federation, FIDE, made the news wires in 2006 when he claimed to have been taken on board an alien spacecraft while on a business trip in 1997. It happened on the 17th of September, he told a British journalist. I was taken from my apartment in Moscow and taken to this spaceship, and we went to some star. I asked, please bring me back, because the next day I had to be back in Karmakia, in Elista, to go to the Ukraine. No problem, they said, you have time. How much of that experience do you recall? asked the journalist. Lamtsinoff's responses were somewhat brief. They are people like us, he replied. They have the same mind, the same vision, and so on. I talked with them, I understood that we are not alone, we are not unique. I am not a crazy man, but after that, when I gave the first interview to Radio Freedom in Russia 5 years ago, thousands of people wrote me letters or called by phone, saying, Kirsten, you are a politician and you are not afraid to talk about it. Which, at least, is more than can be said for any other president or national leader, apart, perhaps, from the current Russian Prime Minister and former President Dmitry Medvedev, see later. In another interview, on a Russian talk show on April 26, 2010, Lamtsinoff revealed that the experience had begun with the appearance of a semi-transparent half-tube on the balcony of his apartment. He then entered it and met human-like creatures in yellow spacesuits, the Moscow Times reported. I am often asked which language I use to talk to them. Perhaps it was on a level of the exchange of the ideas, he explained to the program host. They put a spacesuit on me, told me many things, and showed me around. They wanted to demonstrate that UFOs do exist. What has gotten his Russian political peers suddenly agitated after all this time, reports Glenda Quick, is whether he let slip any state secrets and whether there is a proper procedure for dealing with aliens. Andrei Lebedev, a State Duma deputy, was apparently moved by holy terror at Mr. Lamtsinoff's claims, and yesterday wrote to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev asking him to launch an investigation. The Times said. He was concerned about whether Mr. Lamtsinoff's brush with the spaceman affected his ruling of Karmakia and whether they might have tried to get him to divulge state secrets to them. 35. President Obama, during a live interview with Chris Moyles on BBC Radio 1 in May 2012, actor Will Smith, of Men in Black fame, said that during a recent private tour of the White House with President Obama, Smith's 13-year-old son Jaden, himself a Hollywood star, asked Obama for his view on aliens. The aliens, right? Responded Obama, okay, I can neither confirm nor deny the existence of extraterrestrials, but I can tell you that if there had been a top-secret meeting and if there would have had to have been a discussion about it, it would have taken place in this room. 36. The room referred to is the White House Situation Room, a 5,000-square-foot conference room and intelligence management center in the basement of the West Wing of the White House, created in 1961 by President Kennedy. Run by the National Security Council staff for the use of the president and his advisors, the Situation Room serves to monitor and deal with crises at home and abroad and to conduct secure communications. 37. Of more interest is an additional comment made by Will Smith on the radio show. Listen, here's the deal. He claimed to Chris Moyles. I have the top secret information, I just can't share it. You don't think I've made all these movies and not been briefed by the White House? 38. In the seemingly unlikely event that a movie star can be briefed on the subject, it is axiomatic that President Obama would have been briefed to a far greater depth prior to, or following, his inauguration. Although indirectly related, according to investigative journalist and former National Security Agency employee Wayne Madsen, government files reveal CIA connections with President Obama's biological father, Barack Obama Sr., and the president's mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, who is said to have conducted espionage activities in 1960s post-coup Indonesia on behalf of a number of CIA front operations, including the East-West Center at the University of Hawaii, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and the Ford Foundation. Furthermore, Obama's stepfather, Lolo Sotoro, who met Dunham at the East-West Center, was recalled to Indonesia in 1965 to serve as a senior army officer and assist General Suharto and the CIA in the bloody overthrow of President Sukarno. Madsen further reveals that President Obama himself worked from 1983 to 1984 for Business International Corporation, a CIA front that conducted seminars with the world's most powerful leaders and used journalists as agents abroad. 39. according to a poll of 1,114 adults conducted across the United States by the National Geographic Channel in May 2012. 65% of Americans believe President Obama would be more adept than his Republican rival Mitt Romney at dealing with an alien invasion, with women and younger Americans more likely than men and over 65s to agree with that prospect. 11% of respondents were confident they had seen a UFO. 40 National Geographic also claims that 80 million Americans, that's over one quarter, believe in UFOs. Prime Minister Medvedev. On December 7, 2012, Russian Prime Minister, former President, Dmitry Medvedev gave a television interview to five reporters, following which he continued responding to the reporters, making some off-air comments, supposedly without being aware that his microphone was still on. At one point he was asked if the president is handed secret files on aliens when he receives the briefcase needed to activate Russia's nuclear arsenal. Medvedev responded, along with the briefcase with nuclear codes, the president of the country is given a special top secret folder. This folder in its entirety contains information about aliens who visited our planet. Along with this, you are given a report of the absolutely secret special service that exercises control over aliens on the territory of our country. More detailed information on this topic, you can get from a well-known movie called Men in Black. I will not tell you how many of them are among us because it may cause panic. None of the television stations that interviewed Mr. Medvedev broadcast the off-air comments, but they were delivered to Reuters as a pool signal and some were shown on YouTube. Was it all a joke? The London Telegraph claimed that, in response to the question, Medvedev had answered playfully. 41 In fact, his demeanor remained serious. Russian television channels were passing the blame after the unofficial footage was leaked, according to the Moscow Times. 42 Readers can be forgiven for assuming that the Prime Minister was referring to the latest American Men in Black science fiction film. A more accurate translation of what Medvedev actually said, to journalist Mariana Maximovskaya, I learned from Nikolay Lebedev, a leading researcher, is, you can receive more detailed information having watched the documentary film of the same name. Among other aspects, this excellent Russian documentary, The Secret About Men in Black, examines testimony that extraterrestrial bases have been established on Earth, and that some are in restricted U.S. military areas with the full knowledge of the Pentagon. The Rockefeller Initiative. It is not widely known that Lawrence S. Rockefeller, the billionaire philanthropist, 1910 to 2004, took a serious interest in aviation and, in later life, the UFO/alien subject, funding a number of projects relating thereto. As Antonio Junius, the preeminent researcher, explains, this has come to be known as the Rockefeller Initiative, since in some cases they went beyond funding and included an actual lobbying effort to the Clinton White House, undertaken by Rockefeller himself and his lawyer Henry Diamond, in the mid-1990s. Antonio and I were among those involved in one of these projects, resulting in unidentified flying objects briefing document, the best available evidence, a report authored by the distinguished American aviation journalist Don Berliner, a longtime student of the subject, and Antonio Junius. 43 The project was coordinated by Marie Galbraith, wife of investment banker Evan Galbraith, who served as U.S. ambassador to France during the Reagan administration. I never met Rockefeller, but I liaised with Madame Galbraith in London on the project. 1,000 copies of the original edition were printed and distributed to selected VIPs in the U.S. and abroad, including President Clinton. Unfortunately, Antonio points out, the success and impact of the UFO briefing document was limited in real political terms. Most people and the press seemed far more interested in the fact that Rockefeller had sponsored it and was interested in UFOs than with the contents of the report and its political, military, and scientific implications. One significant exception was France. Because of Marie Galbraith's extensive social and political connections from the time she had lived in Paris as the American ambassador's wife, many copies were distributed there, including President Jacques Chirac and CANES, National Center for Space Studies, The briefing document eventually became the model for a similar report prepared by a number of former high-ranking French military and intelligence officers and scientists, who formed a study group called COMTA, Committee for In-Depth Studies, that led to the release of their own report, UFOs and Defense, What Should We Prepare For? COMTA stressed its concern with the continuing high level of secrecy surrounding the subject. For the editors of the book, explained the authors, this secrecy is essentially military in origin. The nation that is first to produce the exceptional characteristics of UFOs will dominate the world. The secrecy was justified during the Cold War, but it is no longer justified now, given the scientific and technical breakthroughs useful to humanity that one can expect to obtain from the study of UFOs. 44 The knowledgeable French authors, however, sidestepped mentioning their own government's highly classified investigations into the subject. In February 1996, Lawrence Rockefeller sent a copy of the briefing document to Dr. John H. Gibbons, assistant to the President for Science and Technology. In his covering letter, CP 408, released under the Freedom of Information Act, together with many other documents relating to the Rockefeller UFO initiative, Rockefeller wrote, "The public interest in UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence obviously remains very high, as evidenced by the recent cover story in Time magazine, and the many television programs, including one this week. I sponsored this report because it seemed useful to bring together the most credible evidence about UFO sightings. While I do not necessarily agree with every finding and conclusion, I do believe that the evidence presented indicates that this subject merits serious scientific study. Toward that end, I hope that our government, other governments, and the United Nations will cooperate in making any information they may have available." 45. Rockefeller's comment about the subject meriting serious scientific study seems to indicate his unawareness of the fact that numerous scientists worldwide have been studying and dealing with the subject since the 1940s. In the U.S., very high security clearances are required for those involved in the special access programs, SAPs, relating to the matter. As science journalist Terry Hansen points out in his masterly book, The Missing Times, News Media Complicity in the UFO Cover-Up, the findings of private science are not available to those who don't have the necessary security clearances, and the Pentagon has an incentive to ensure that the knowledge acquired by private science is not independently discovered by public science. 46 In China, numerous scientists are likewise involved, however, academic freedom is claimed to prevail. In 1985, for instance, at a scientific conference on UFOs held in Dalian, some 40 papers were presented. 47 And by 1992, the China UFO Research Association, affiliated with the China Association for Science and Technology, had 4,600 full members as well as 40,000 research associates, mostly scientists and engineers. 48 Religious ramifications. In AD After Disclosure, Richard Dolan and Bryce Zabel explore the possible ramifications arising from hypothesized official disclosure of the alien situation. They cover a lot of ground, including the religious aspects. In this respect, the Vatican seems more open-minded than most, some of its astronomers publicly expressing their opinion that life is widespread throughout the cosmos. Citing Paola Harris, 49 Dolan and Zabel report, for example, that the late Monsignor Guido Baldacci, a longtime friend of Pope John Paul II, stated his conviction in the reality of alien life on many occasions, and more than once attested to his belief that contact between humans and extraterrestrials was real. 50. Dolan and Zabel also cite a 1994 survey by Victoria Alexander of clergy from Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish congregations. One of the questions asked was if any hypothetical official confirmation of the discovery of an advanced, technologically superior extraterrestrial civilization would have severe negative effects on the country's moral, social, and religious foundations. In sharp contrast to the conventional wisdom that religion would collapse, Victoria writes in her book Extraterrestrial Life and Religion, ministers surveyed do not feel their faith and the faith of their congregation would be threatened. A 2002 Roper poll asked a similar question, and received a similar response. Not only was the answer overwhelmingly no, it actually rose with age, Dolan and Zabel report. 51. But what if these respondents had been made aware of the negative aspects of the alien scenario, such as abductions, as opposed to a naive set of beliefs based perhaps on films such as E.T. The Extraterrestrial? Reaction to any official disclosure will surely be predicated on what we are told, which is unlikely to reflect the truth. Earlier I cited the briefing of President Carter on the alien problem, attended by Harvey Jack McGeorge too, among others. According to McGeorge, a friend of his reveals, the two main reasons the government is withholding the truth about UFOs are the religious question, and the fact that we do not have control of the situation. They are in charge. According to McGeorge, if the Bible said that God created the heaven and earth, then what the hell do the aliens believe in? The thing that the aliens fear the most is that man would find out that we are not the creation of an omnipotent supreme being, but possibly the creation of these aliens themselves, that we are a genetic experiment. And they also fear greatly that religion, as a controlling factor on behavior in the world, if the truth was known, that controlling factor would immediately be destroyed and there might be anarchy. The second reason, that we are not in control, I think is pretty obvious. 52, but times are changing. In 2008, for example, Pope Benedict XVI let it be known that there is no conflict between believing in God and in the possibility of extraterrestrial brothers perhaps more evolved than humans. Journalist Nick Pisa reported that the papal ruling came from Father José Funes, a Jesuit then in charge of the Vatican's observatory and an expert on galaxies. In an interview with the Vatican's official newspaper, Funes stated, in part, as follows: astronomers believe that the universe is formed of hundreds of millions of galaxies, and in these are hundreds of millions of stars. Many of these, or all of them, could contain planets. So how can we exclude that developed life cannot be elsewhere? It's possible to believe in God and extraterrestrials without bringing into question our own faith. 53, Papal Connections. On May 31, 1963, George Adamski had a private audience at the Vatican with the ailing Pope John XXIII, to deliver an important package he said had been given him by one of his alien contacts, probably Orthon. Prior to entering the Vatican, he was accompanied by Lou Zinstag and May Morlett, his Swiss and Belgian representatives respectively. I expected him to be admitted through the well-known gate where the Swiss guards were posted, Lou reported. Yet, without any hesitation, he walked to the left of the dome where I now noticed a high wooden entrance gate behind the open doorway, with a small built-in door. The door was partly opened and a man was standing inside it, gesturing discreetly to George. On his chest I noticed some kind of material in white, green, and red. May and I returned an hour later. There was George already, grinning like a monkey, with his eyes shining like black topazes. "We have done it," he said. "I was received by the Pope. He gave me his blessing and I gave him the message." When later in the day we lunched with George, he told us that the Pope was not lying in the room above St. Peter's Square, as the people had been told, but that his bedroom faced the most beautiful part of the Vatican garden. And he added confidentially, "If you ask me, the Pope is hardly a dying man. They haven't yet tried to operate on him, but I'm sure that's what they will do soon." George added that the Pope even had rosy cheeks, and had said that he did not feel so bad. George had been helped on with a kind of cassock over his suit before he entered the bedroom. The Pope gave him a nice smile and said, "I have been expecting you." When George handed him the sealed package from Copenhagen, he said, also in English, "My son, this is what I have been waiting for." He then spoke to his visitor in a very low and soft voice for a few minutes. Adamski had to bend his head down close to the Pope's, whose last words were, "My son, don't worry, we will make it." After receiving the papal blessing, Adamski was ushered out, although only in the preliminary stages of cancer. The Pope died 2 days later. There is ample evidence that this meeting did take place, such as the gold medallion given to Adamski during the audience, with the Pope's head in profile thereon, dated May 31, 1963.